This is Modern Woman. Find us at modernwoman.co for further info.
My guest today is Dr. Susan Rose, the founder of Bloom Coaching, specializing in leadership and personal development. Prior to launching her coaching company, Susan was a professor at the Henley Business School, a role which opened opportunities to working in Southeast Asia and South Africa. Working with women is an area she is extremely passionate about, and I'm in conversation with Susan today to hear more about her career background and learn about leadership in the workplace, where she's going to provide some practical advice and key takeaways. It's lovely to have you with us today, Susan.
Hi, Rosie. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk to you today.
You're welcome. So I know that before you started Bloom Coaching, you were a professor at Henley Business School, but you didn't get there the traditional route. Can you share with us a bit about your background and how you got into a leading business school of this nature?
Yes, Rosie. As you've mentioned, mine wasn't a conventional route to where I ended up today. I think it's true to say that where we end up is not always where we start off. I left school without completing my A-levels. I went off abroad, did a lot of traveling, lived in Australia for quite a while, did a lot of jobs, many of them around secretarial work and that kind of thing. And when I eventually returned back to the UK, I really realised that perhaps I did want to fill a gap. And so I went into doing a degree quite later in life. I was about 27 when I started doing it. And then I worked my way through. I did a psychology degree. And although I didn't become a trained psychologist, I used that and worked in advertising. I worked in communications work, did a lot of design work. And I worked in that industry for about 10 years. And when I had children, you know, quite often women change their view of where they are in life when their children come along. I went into education. And so actually I didn't qualify, got my master's when I was 40 and went on and did a doctorate much later when I was in my late 40s. So I worked in education and in particular in the business environment at Henley Business School for about 20 years. And, you know, through that route, I got a lot of experience of leadership, of managing people, of management development of people, and eventually ended up as a coach to where I am today.
Well, we're going to hear more about your doctorate when you were 48. But first of all, let's have some music. So your first song choice is Jerry Rafferty with Baker Street. And why does this record resonate with you, Susan?
So I spent the early part of my life, particularly when I was mentioned working in marketing, advertising, design. I lived in London, lived in West London. It was a real fun time in my life. That was from about most of my 30s around that time. And I lived in a time when Jerry Rafferty was one of the musics of that time. And this song about Baker Street just really takes me back to when I lived in London and was socializing and working in London. And I just love the saxophone and the guitar on the song itself. It's just amazing.
So you mentioned before that you started your degree when you were 27 and you did your doctorate when you were 48. And I think there is a huge misconception that we must study so young. You know, I think it's the done thing to obviously, like you mentioned, a conventional route coming out of school and then going to universities. Sometimes without even knowing what we actually want to do for our whole career. But tell us, what was it like starting your studies at an older age?
Yeah, you're right, Rosie. It's not conventional. And when I went to the City University in London when I was 27, and I was classed as really old. I mean, we think of it now, that's not old at all. But I was in amongst a very small group of mature adults that were on the course. And at the time, I thought I was way behind everybody else and so on. But I think you come to realise, and particularly now, it's acceptable that we have many changes in our lives, that we can study, we can learn. We have an expression, lifelong learning, in education nowadays. And lifelong learning means, you know, people can learn at any age, and that life is all about continuing to learn. And I never adopted the view that I was too old to do anything, and I still don't adopt that view. So learning at 27 to go back into education wasn't easy, but I think I got more out of my degree because of the maturity that I had. And similarly, you mentioned there, I was asked and offered the opportunity to do a doctorate when I was at Henley Business School, and I was in my late 40s. And again, I thought, am I too old for this? In actual fact, it was a real pivotal point in my life, and it changed the direction of what I could do, both academically at the business school and at the university that's part of, but also the confidence and the view that it gave of myself to me. So I viewed myself very differently, that I was actually capable of doing that. I always say there's nothing like doing a doctorate to cure you of imposter syndrome. So if you can do that, you can do most things in life, I think. So I think I'm a great believer that confidence comes from achieving things, that by achieving things, we kind of build up our bank or store of confidence. And so the more you have a go at things, no matter what your age, the more you build that bank of confidence.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. What I like about your journey as well is you've got the qualifications under your belt, but you've also got that life experience. And you spent quite a significant time abroad, actually, working in Southeast Asia and South Africa. What did those experiences teach you about working with different cultures?
You're right. I spent 3 years living permanently in Malaysia and working in Malaysia and other parts of Southeast Asia, including Singapore. And that introduced me to a very different way of life and cultures around the Asian culture. I was in Southeast Asia because I was given the responsibility to start up Henley Business School in Malaysia. Doing that meant that I had to recruit, develop, support, manage people from a very, very wide multicultural background, different languages, different nationalities, different cultures. And that taught me a lot. It taught me a lot about myself and about how we do things in the UK, and that's not necessarily the best way to do them or the only way to do them. So I learned a lot about how to manage multicultural teams and how to lead people who were coming into their jobs in a very from a different background. As you mentioned there, I've also taught a lot at the campus that Henley Business School has in South Africa. Again, a very different environment and a very different culture, and a really interesting country that has come through very difficult times, and now people who are absolutely bursting with enthusiasm to develop and learn. So all of those have taught me about leadership, that leadership is about really enabling others to do their job well. That's my view of leadership. And in particular, working with a lot of young women who are aspiring to move up. So those experiences of working abroad and leading different people have been enormously useful to me now in the work I do, coaching women in leadership.
And you're a mum, you had your children at this time. How did you juggle working abroad as well as being a mum?
I don't know, actually. I look back on it and sometimes don't know how I did it. I mean, maybe you should ask my children who are now adults that question. Obviously, I had super support. I think one of the main things for women working is you have to have really good backup support in terms of your domestic life. So I've had some super nannies and women that have been in my home helping me and working with me to look after my children. I also had to become super organized. I used to try and run things and still do to military precision, because that's the only way that you can do it, I think, if you're trying to juggle your home life, your children's lives, and your work and your career. I went through a particular difficult patch in my life, excuse me, at one point with regard to my home life, And I learned that women are incredibly good at supporting each other. So I had some super friends and family who actually helped me get through that time as well.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And we're going to speak about more about your work, which I know you do a lot of work supporting women. And what would you say has been your biggest challenge and how have you overcome it?
I think the biggest challenge that I think nearly all women that have children go through is that terribly agony around, you know, am I being true to myself and achieving what I want to do and reaching my potential, but at the same time, am I doing the right thing for my children? And we have a responsibility to our children. We bring them into the world. And, you know, am I supporting them and am I there for them enough? And I think that challenge of being two people wearing two hats at the same time is so difficult. And when I'm asked about that by women that I coach now, I often say to them, you can only do what you can do. You know, you can only be the best version of yourself that you know you're able to be. And don't beat yourself up if you don't get every last bit of it right. That we get there in the end. We all take different routes and just do what you can do each day.
So let's move on to your second song choice, which is one of my favourites also. It's Dance in the Dark by Bruce Springsteen. So tell us about this record.
Yeah, so again, this kind of is harping back to, I guess it was the 80s. I vividly remember going to Wembley Stadium with an old boyfriend to see Bruce Springsteen. And we managed to get really good seats up the back where there was a lot of space and we were literally dancing the whole way through. And I love this song, Dancing in the Dark. It's very raw and it's great dance music. And it makes me feel like I want to get up and dance around the kitchen.
I get up in the evening and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired.
Bruce Springsteen. So what led you to become a coach and start the work that you do today under Bloom?
I was very fortunate, Rosie, because while I worked at Henley Business School, I was offered the opportunity to train as a coach. They're one of the leaders in providing coaching development. So I learned the skills, but I think that there's one thing to know how to do the process and how to know what to do, but it's another thing to actually be able to bring the right background and experience to it. And so through, as I say, a lot of the work that I did leading and managing teams in my day job, I started to use coaching as a way of helping people and working with people. So rather than just telling people what to do, I would coach them through the idea of what I wanted them to be able to do. And so that combined with some of the work that I do in the area of working with women, I came to the view that I had a lot to give back. So when I stopped working full time at the business school, I thought to myself, well, you know, I've got a lot to give back. I've got a lot of experience that I can share with others. And I also know the process of how to coach. And so when you put those two things together, wanting to give back to women and also at the same time share your leadership experiences, it seemed the ideal thing to do to be a coach. And so I coach women in the workplace around mid to senior level. Also, I do business coaching. So that's helping women to get started as startups or young entrepreneurs who want to actually get their businesses moving as well. So I coach in both of those areas and really enjoy it.
And what inspires you to want to support women in particular?
Well, I went through a bit of a difficult time in my life once as a woman. I think, you know, many of us do, but I went through a particularly difficult patch. And at that point in time, I realized we draw on our own resources. You know, maybe our education that we've had. It might be whether we've got a solid family around us. It might be around, might be financial money we've got, but we've all got a different level of resources in my view. And some of us has more resources than others. And so what I feel very strongly is that I was fortunate and I've kind of got through to where I am today, but everybody needs a hand along the way. So we should all give each other a hand up as we go. So that's very much what motivates me to do what I do.
I would say that I think people know that they need a coach or mentor at a certain time in their life or their career, but sometimes they don't know what they should be looking for to support their needs or challenges. Can you explain to us what is the main difference between a coach and a mentor and why someone would need a coach in particular?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of confusion around what the difference is between a coach and a mentor. And I would say that the two names are sort of used interchangeably a little bit. For me, what coaching is around is somebody sitting alongside another person, helping them to achieve their goals. That sounds a bit simplistic, but at the end of the day, coaching is not about telling somebody what to do, but it's about a process that helps somebody find their solutions, find out what do they want to achieve and how might they go about that. Mentoring tends to be used as a word to describe when one person's actually done what the other person's doing and their goals are very specifically around a job or a task. So, for example, we can say that a senior doctor, a consultant, might mentor a junior doctor. And the mentoring is around the very specific aspects of being a doctor and how to progress as a doctor. Coaching is a bit broader than that. I can coach people in many different industries. I might know about the industry, but on the other hand, what they need help with might not necessarily directly relate to a particular industry or a particular role. So sometimes when I'm a coach, I'm also a mentor. So for example, I coach people in the educational industry. So people in education might want to draw on my experiences, but I could also coach somebody that's not in education, that's in an industry like law. I coach around all sorts of things to do with their personal development. So it might be around things like their negotiation skills, communication skills, around their ability to work with others well and so on. And that might be irrespective of whether or not I've ever worked in that industry or not.
I understand. So let's move on to your third song choice, which is Days Like This by Van Morrison. Why does this song resonate with you?
Well, I've just been to actually see the film Belfast that is out at the moment, which has got the brilliant Kenneth Branagh directing it. I've always loved Van Morrison's music, and that is the soundtrack to that film very much. But the song is really all about focusing on the fact that there will be better days. And I'm a great optimist. I'm a real half full person. And I always think that when you're having a bad day, you should always remember that there will be good times again. So there's a lovely line in there that says, Mama said there would always be days like this. In other words, there will be good days again. And I think it's something to focus on. When you're having a rubbish day, you should always focus on there'll be a good day again.
Like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this when you don't need to worry. There'll be days like this when no one's in a hurry. There'll be days like this when you don't get betrayed by that old Judas kiss. Oh, my mama told me.
And that was Days Like This by Van Morrison. So one of the struggles that companies are facing now is encouraging and trying to get more women into senior and leadership positions. What advice can you give to women who are looking to progress into a leadership role?
You're right, Rosie. There's a big push at the moment to try to improve the figures that we currently see around how many women are in leadership roles. And by that, I don't mean necessarily very top leadership CEO roles, but who are supporting and leading teams at some level. And there's a number of reasons which we could go into why that is. But I think that the advice I would give to women, particularly young women, is to think very early on, about why, where they want to get to in their career and why. Don't just accept the assumption that that's where you have to end up. I think we're all good at different things and we all have something to bring to what we do. So why do you want to be a leader? Do you want to be a leader? Just don't make the assumption you just have to do that career-wise. So ask yourself, why do I want to do that? And also ask yourself, what type of leader do I want to be? Sometimes I think women feel very strongly that they have to follow a mold, that they have to follow a very kind of hierarchical command and control, be very much out there as a leader. But I think there's different types of leadership. And I would suggest that you should always be true to who you are. And the type of leader should reflect the type of person that you are, rather than trying to copy a mold for what leadership should look like. So getting into leadership is around what you want to achieve in terms of your own goals. and then deciding, therefore, whether leadership is for you in the first place, and then what that would look like for you.
What are the characteristics of a good male and female leader?
It's interesting to think about whether or not men and women are different as leaders, but we do tend to see characteristics or traits very differently when we look at what makes for good leaders. Interestingly, with the pandemic, Rosie, there's a lot, wasn't there, about whether perhaps some of the countries that fared better were the ones that had female leaders rather than male leaders. The New Zealand leader, Jacinda Ardern, is particularly pulled out as an example of a very different type of leader. Some of the studies that have been done around leadership have looked at whether there's differences. We tend to see some of the traits and characteristics of people management being strongly amplified in female leaders. So female leaders tend to be quite empathetic. They tend to be quite people focused. They tend to be quite collaborative. So go about getting things done through collaboration as a team. Whereas male leadership tends to, these are generalizations, but they tend to be what we might call more outcome focused. So men as leaders tend to see a task, see a problem. They tend to look at how that will get done rather than looking at the wider kind of collective sometimes. And obviously there's the issues of competition and whether men and women are different in terms of their competitive approach. So women tend to see the job that needs getting done and get on and get it done, rather than whether there is any kind of element of competition around how that gets done. These are generalizations, but there have been studies done on those differences. It can be that sometimes women as leaders who do show a lot of empathy and collaboration can therefore be seen as weak in terms of some organizational culture. So as I mentioned before, I think it's really important for you to know, am I in the right organization and am I the kind of leadership that they want? Is that me? So am I the right leader for this kind of organization? And that's what really women should be asking themselves.
Yeah, it's a good point. And why don't you feel that there are more women in leadership positions?
I think there's a couple of reasons for this. One is the fact that the point in time when senior leadership roles emerge for women tends to clash with other things that are going on in their lives. So the obvious one is children, starting families and so on. And it happens to women quite often around a time when perhaps their career is starting to move and take off. As we mentioned before, the challenges of that means that they have to make decisions as to where their priorities lie. And I think sometimes that women get behind the curve a little bit. So I myself didn't move into more senior leadership roles till I was much older because of all the things that I was doing earlier in my life. So I think that's one reason. And coupled with that is a lot of women look at it and go, well, is that actually what I want to do? Where does my priority lie in terms of my personal life rather than, you know, what is very demanding being a senior leader? But the other aspect of this, Rosie, is I think to do with the nature of many organisations, whether the, as I say, the characteristics of it fit for how women are as leaders. So we can refer to organisations as being what we call gendered. So some organisations have much more masculine characteristics around them, and therefore the fit just doesn't go well between female leadership and the more masculine traits or characteristics of the organisation. And so feeling like we fit is really important to be a good leader. And so I think many women look at it and say, actually, I could do that, but it's not what fits for me. And we see quite a trend for women moving off and starting their own thing. So saying, I want to be a leader, but I'll lead my own organization and do my own thing. And so about a third of all entrepreneurs, startups now, are by women, female entrepreneurs who are creating their own environment and their own ethos and culture that will fit for them as a leader.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think as well that, you know, once you get into a more senior leadership position, it is so much more demanding, or it can be more demanding, which there's no denying that is going to, you know, have an effect on the personal life as well and personal commitments at home.
Yeah, that's something that we're really seeing emerging now as we all kind of move back after the pandemic into what will be a new normality. A lot of discussion and debate at the moment about the role of remote working that enables us to work from home much more, but the idea of hybrid working, which many organizations are adopting, where we will have some time in the office and some time at home. And the assumption is that that will be enormously useful for women, But actually what came through very strongly in the pandemic was that actually just meant that women did even more stuff in the home. The figures for the amount of women that were responsible for school, homeschooling, and the domestic work that had to go on at the same time was quite harsh on a lot of women. And, you know, it's not really to do with the process. So it's not the process of doing the work, whether we do it sitting at our desk at home or whether we do it sitting at our desk in the office, albeit not commuting can be helpful for women. That's not really the issue for me. For me, the issue is what is the attitude that we have in this country towards male and female responsibilities, particularly in the home. So if we have a situation where women are predominantly expected to do certain types of what's often referred to as non-paid labor, so that's the jobs of looking after children, picking them up from school, taking them to the doctor when they're ill, these sorts of things, if that's not shared equally between two partners in a relationship, then one partner will end up doing more of it and be juggling this task, as we've said, of trying to get on in their careers and work and also looking after the home. It's interesting if you look at countries in Scandinavia. They have a lot better figures for progress for women in leadership and progress for women in the workplace. And that's partly because the state system in society provides a lot more shared responsibility for men and women around childcare, the provision of childcare, and so on, paternity leave, and just an expectation that it's okay for men to be the ones that pick the kids up from school. It's okay for men to perhaps be the ones that work part time. It's okay for men to be perhaps the ones that do more around domestic support. And so until we get to a position where men and women are kind of viewed a bit more equally around what their responsibilities are outside of work, I don't think we'll ever get a change in what their view of their joint sort of equal gender equality will be in work. So yes, hybrid working is going to help a lot of us, men and women, but the real change will come, I think, through a kind of mindset change around what women are expected to do.
Very interesting indeed. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your education around leadership. Just a couple more questions. It would be really good to sort of know what does success look like to you, Susan?
To me, success is about, you know, how you feel about yourself. I mean, I think you know if you've been successful, whether you feel that you have, we use the word flourishing quite a lot, you've flourished. Have you actually got somewhere in life where you've achieved something that you can look back on and say, you know, I'm proud of what I did, or I've achieved something that I didn't think I could do, or I've managed to work in a way and lead a life in a way that's made me feel good about myself. And I think success is being able to feel good about yourself. And that might come for some people through money and having a big salary and a big car and a big house. For other people, it might come through just the fact that they can say that they had some achievements in life, some fun in life, some enjoyment in life. So I think you measure your success by how you feel about yourself and your own sort of self-respect, I think.
That's a good way of looking at it. So we can find you, for our listeners, they can find you on our Modern Woman Coach and Mentor matching platform. But how else can they find you? Can they connect with you on LinkedIn, or how would you like people to get in contact with you, Susan?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me under Dr. Susan Rose on LinkedIn. As you've mentioned, I'm on your coaching and mentoring platform, but I can also be reached just directly through my email, which is susan@bloomsr.com.
Fantastic. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish off with your last song choice?
Not really, Rosie, other than to say that, you know, it's great working with you and your team at Modern Woman. I'm a great advocate of what you do, because I do think that one of the ways in which, as I mentioned, women can get on is by helping each other. So I'm a great believer in collaboration myself as a way forward. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you. Likewise, Susan, it's always a pleasure to be working with you. And that was Susan Rose from Bloom Coaching. And we are now finishing with the record, which is Blowing in the Wind by Peter Ball and Mary.
How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever? Blowing in the wind, the answer.
This is Modern Woman. Find us at modernwoman.co for further info.